Martin Cornell joins me this week to talk about mild ale style in British brewing history. This is Beersmith Podcast number 233.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 233, and it's late March 2021. Martin Cornell joins me this week to talk about mild ale style and British brewing history. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. To order yours today, visit BlickmanEngineering.com. For more information, again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, I urge you to give Beersmith 3 Brewing Software a try. If you've not downloaded the new 3.1 update, grab it now as it includes improved data storage, additional dry hop options, new mash pH models, new add-ons, and much more. To download the free 21-day trial, go to beersmith.com today. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome first-time guest Martin Cornell. Martin has been writing about the history of beer and beer styles for more than 20 years. Uncovering the true stories behind our favorite styles from IPA to porter. He's a multiple trophy award winner at both the North American Beer Guild and the Beer Writers and British Guild of Beer Writer Awards. Martin, it's fantastic to have you on the show. How are you doing today? Coming from London, I think.
Oh, yep, I'm feeling fine. Thank you very much. We have all the pubs are locked down here, but apart from that, we're great.
Well, it's fantastic you have you on the show, and I'm sorry the pubs are locked down, but I understand you've actually been writing about beer history primarily in the UK, I think, for some 20 years now, right?
Yeah, except that I'm now branching out. My latest project is a worldwide history of porter and stout, which perhaps we can talk when I finally get that.
No, that's that pretty interesting. Finished. Well, what books have you written? Can you talk?
Sorry, I didn't hear that. Say that.
Oh, that's okay. What books or articles have you written for?
I've written very broadly on most subjects. I mean, I wrote originally the first book that came out was just a general book about history of beer in Britain. Then I did one that, funnily enough, I have a copy here.
Oh, nice.
You probably can't see that. That's the book I wrote on British beer styles.
Amber, Gold, and Black, it's called.
Amber, Gold, and Black. Now out of print, although you still can get the Kindle version of it. And other articles and pieces about beer history. But for the past 3 years, I've been trying to complete this book on the history of porter and stout, which is an enormous subject. Actually, I didn't realize quite how big a subject it was, so I'm rapidly coming to the end of that, and hopefully when that's out we can talk on here about that. But I'm here today to talk about an entirely for the beer that in fact in Britain replaced porter as the favorite beer, which was a style of beer called mild, which is very little known outside of Britain, but was for almost 100 years the leading beer style across Great Britain.
Very interesting. Before we jump into mild, we're going to talk about that for most of the show, but can you talk a little about how wildly popular porter was? Because a lot of people don't realize that porter was the dominant style for quite a long time, right?
Oh yeah, it was invented or developed in the very beginning of the 18th century, and quickly became the most popular style among the London working classes. And these guys were drinking huge amounts of this beer. They were drinking, you know, 10 or 12 pints of beer a day, not to get themselves drunk, but because they had very strenuous jobs. They needed a lot of calorie intake, and drinking beer was a very easy way of getting the calories inside. Many of them worked as at a job called portering, which was carrying goods around the streets on and off ships and so on. They were called porters, and that's how the beer got its name, from their job. They were the big drinkers of this beer, and so it became known as porter. It then got very popular, not just among the working classes, but among the middle and upper classes as well. And its popularity also went abroad, so it became very popular. It was very popular in America. I mean, I think most people in the States now know that George Washington was a big fan of porter, and he ordered his porter from a brewer in Philadelphia, who in fact was the son of a London porter brewer, Robert Hare. Wasn't just in America, in Europe, and particularly in Russia, in Sweden, in Germany, in Poland, they all started enjoying imported porter and began brewing it themselves. So from that, you get developments such as what we now call today Baltic porter. You get a long history of brewing porter in Sweden, which is still going on. You still get porter brewed in Sweden. And there was a thing called Deutscher porter, German porter as well, and that was a big beer style. So porter was the first worldwide beer, long before lager. Porter and stout were the world's first favorite beer.
That's amazing.
And then in Britain, gradually from about the 1850s, so from about the 1720s through to the 1850s, porter was the most popular beer in Britain, easily. And it created fortunes among the big brewers that brewed it. They became very rich. They married into the aristocracy. They became members of parliament. From about 1850, the porter starts declining in favour. And it's not so much because people's tastes were changing, but because porter drinkers were dying, and they were being replaced by new cohorts of drinkers coming in who were drinking something else. And what they were drinking was a style that was known as mild ale. Two types of beer basically going on, known as mild, which is fresh beer, new beer, still quite sweet, still untart, because the organisms like Pediococcus and Brettanomyces that give beer aged tart flavors hadn't had time to work yet. And what was called stale beer, not stale in the sense that we mean it today, but just beer that had stood, and it and very often kept in large casks, 108-gallon casks, which were known as butts. And then later on, they developed a way of storing beer in large vats. Well, ale, which had started off as a brown beer and then became pale, but not pale ale in the sense that we use it today. This was a largely unhopped beer and served up very quickly. So it was quite sweet, still quite strong, about 7 or 8% alcohol. That became and brewed with almost entirely with pale malt. So it was an unhopped pale ale, basically. That became increasingly through the 19th century the replacement in popularity for porter.
And of course, brewing technology changed too. And the pale ale was a fairly recent invention too, right?
Yeah.
Pale malt, yeah. I should say, was a fairly recent, because most of the malts were kilned over wood before the 17th century anyways, right?
Yeah. Well, you had a problem in that to make pale malt, you had to malt over a low heat for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
When you were doing that with wood, you, of course, ended up with a very, very smoky malt, even more smoky than, you know, German Rauch beers or whatever. So this was obviously not something that many customers liked. So instead, most malts were made dried quickly over high heat So it was brown because it had been dried quickly. And it was only the invention of malting with, well, the invention of coke, which enabled long, slow heats to be used in making malt without the sorts of fumes that would poison and flavor the malt if you use coal. Mm-hmm. So the invention of coke in the 1640s or so, in Derby, which is in the English Midlands, not very far from Burton-on-Trent, meant that the development of pale ale, pale malt to make pale ale with.
Right.
And so you start to see pale ale arrive around about the end of the 17th, beginning of the 18th century. And but as I say, this was not the pale ale as we know it today. It was pretty much an unhopped or only lightly hopped pale ale.
And I assume that evolved eventually into the mild we talk about in the roughly 1850s, I guess?
Yeah, probably from about the 1810s, 1820s. So there was this kind of a divergence.
Mm-hmm.
There was the export pale ales, which had to be heavily hopped to survive the journey to warmer climes. And these were the ones that eventually developed into IPA. So this was known as pale ale as pale ale as prepared for India was the bizarre expression that they used. So that was kind of one direction that these pale ales took. And the other direction was into the unhopped and mild ales. So hopped pale ales tended to be kept for a long time, anything up to a year or more before they went on sale. So they were very bretty, but not too sour because they were heavily hopped. So the high hop rate kept a lot of the bugs at bay. The mild ales, meanwhile, were on sale quickly, so not too much souring, quite sweet, still quite strong, about 7 or 8% alcohol. And the working classes gradually started drinking more and more of this beer than they had of the porter. And so you start to see porter become less popular, become lower in price. And this kind of sets up a vicious circle, because what started happening with the porter was that the brewers and the publicans started dumping all their stale beer and slops into the porter, because you could disguise it because it was black, so nobody noticed that if you were putting old beer into it. And so it got a worse reputation, because suddenly people were thinking, oh, I don't like the taste of this. Taste as if somebody's put the slops into it, which of course they had. And meanwhile, for a long time, the porter brewers and the ale brewers had been separate people. If you start to see the ale brewers, particularly in London, as their sales increase, they get bigger and bigger. And gradually they start to challenge the big porter brewers inside. So I'm going to use names here that will mean nothing to most of your listeners, but the big porter brewers are people like Whitbread, Truman, Barclay Perkins. And the big ale brewers were people in London called Mann, called Charrington, and called Courage. Mm-hmm. And you start to see that people like the Manns and the Charringtons, their breweries are getting bigger and bigger as the 19th century goes on, and the sales of ale are increasing, and the sales of porter are falling. And eventually the porter brewers started having to brew mild ales as well. Otherwise, their business was just going to disappear.
And the mild ale, what were some of the factors that drove really this increase in popularity, particularly among the working class?
Well, the answer to that is, who knows? Who knows why tastes change? It's just a puzzle. Why, for example, did we in Britain resist the turn to lagers and pale lagers that had swept across Europe and eventually swept across the United States Everybody turned in the 19th century and the early 20th century to these new styles of pale lagered beers, cold pale beers. But not in Britain. We ignored that entirely. Don't ask me why.
Because
explaining popular taste is I think impossible. It was just something that we didn't pick up on, and it was not until the 1970s, 1980s, so 100 years after everybody else, that Britain finally caught up with the lager. In Ireland, they carried on drinking stouts and porters. You know, they never had the mild ale revolution that we had in Britain. So Ireland remained the home of porter and stout drinking.
And of course, as you mentioned, in the rest of the world, lagers started to take over.
And in the rest of the world, yeah, absolutely. So porter, which had been the world beer, was replaced almost entirely by the rise of lager.
I've even heard some crazy theories like the availability of cheap glassware was actually a factor, because in the prior ages it was very expensive to buy clear glass, for example.
Yeah, in Britain, that was certainly one of the reasons for the rise of the pale bitter ales, IPAs, and the lower strength bitters, because I think glass had been taxed up until about 1845 and was very expensive. But once the tax came off, and once it became cheaper to produce pressware glass beer tumblers and so on, yes, there was certainly an attraction in seeing your beautiful sparkling amber coloured pale beer. Whereas if you were drinking porter, it didn't matter. You were drinking it in a pewter pot, or sometimes very very often in a china mug. In working class pubs, china mugs were the big favourite beer container. Yeah, and I'm sure that equally true in lager drinking countries, and the fact that you could suddenly see this beautiful sparkling pale effervescent beer there in front of you was part of the attraction. And we didn't miss out on that in Britain, just because we weren't drinking lager. We were still drinking paler beers as opposed to completely black or very very dark brown porters that have been drinking. But the bizarre thing is that these mild beers started off pale, and then from about the 1880s, you start to see mild beers become darker and darker.
Interesting.
And so in the 20th century, mild was pretty much, I wouldn't say completely, but somewhere between two-thirds and three-quarters of mild beers were dark beers, dark mild. And again, it continued to grow in popularity. And in some breweries, anything up to 80% of the beer that they were producing was mild beer. Still very much a working class beer. We had this bizarre social setup in British pubs that they were divided into, most of them were divided into two, sometimes three, but mostly two bars. You had what was called the public bar. Mm-hmm. Which is where the working class went. The beer was one or two pennies cheaper. The furnishings were quite basic. They were just wooden floors, and basic wooden chairs. And then you had next door in the same building, accessed by another different door, you had the saloon bar. And this was for the middle classes. And you get these bizarre things. I don't know if you've ever come across it, or any of your listeners have ever come across it. You get something in the British pub called the snob screen. Do Google or have a look at
not heard of that.
Have a look at snob screen in Google images, and you will see this thing where across the top of the bar are these hinged little windows, and it was so that you could open it up and order from the barmaid or barman your drink, and then close it. And it meant that somebody in the bar opposite who might be your boss or your worker, couldn't see you in the pub what you were drinking. And they were called snob screens, a very strange part of the British pub that is now almost disappeared. There are very few pubs now left still with these snob screens in place. So what you drank in the saloon, in the public bar, was mild because you were working class. Mm-hmm. And you were paying 4 pence for a quart, 2 pints of beer. And so the public bar became known as the four ale bar because you were drinking four ale, 4 pence a quart ale. Mm-hmm. And in the saloon bar, you drank bitter because you were a bit more up class, a bit more middle class. And so you didn't drink mild, you drank bitter. And there was a tremendous snobbery about this. And some pubs would not actually sell you mild in a saloon bar. You had to go around and drink the mild in the public bar because that's where public bar drinkers went. And four ale became quite an insult. It smells like a four ale bar in here, somebody might say, you know, if it was particularly smoky and smelly or whatever. And four ale bar language, you know, a lot of smoke, a lot of swearing going on. It sounds like a four ale bar. This is a thing that went on in Britain until really the beginning of the 1970s. You still had this split between the saloon bar, middle class, bit classier, better furnishings, and beer was a bit more expensive, and you drank bitter. And public bar, more down market, you drank mild.
Wow. Well, you mentioned that mild actually reigned as the king of beers all the way through both world wars and roughly in the 1960s. What replaced it, and how did it decline?
Well, what happened, as I said, mild had originally been quite a strong beer, 7-8%. And then we come to the First World War, and taxes soared on beers, partly to pay for the war, partly to make it more expensive so that all the munition workers earning large sums of money making shells and so on, bombs for the front, wouldn't go down the pub and get drunk on their money. So the price of beer soared. The strength of beer dived to try to keep it affordable because it was taxed on the amount of alcohol in it.
Right.
And so to keep it affordable, they pushed the strength down. And they also had quite severe restrictions on the amount of raw materials. So that to try to make the raw materials go further, strengths declined as well. And we came out in Britain at the end of the First World War with beers that had plunged to below 4%, probably 3 to 3.5% for the most popular beers to try to keep them affordable. And of course, there was no way that taxes were going to go down. No government ever put beer taxes down unless absolutely forced to. So we ended up at the end of the First World War with the most popular beers, the mild beers, now being pushed down to a strength of around about 3, sometimes even lower than that, to 2.9, 2.8% alcohol. But the brewers, and it's one of the triumphs of British beer brewing, the brewers had somehow managed to produce tasty, low-gravity beers, exactly the sort of thing that people are looking for today. They achieved this after the First World War by using dark malts, and I think this is one of the reasons why mild became a dark beer, because it was easier to produce a tastier, low-gravity beer using dark malts.
So how dark does it get, I guess? I imagine it starts out fairly pale, right?
Yeah, it gets as dark as stout. I mean, I was in a pub in Liverpool in the mid-1970s, and everybody was drinking the dark mild from this particular brewery, very cool, Burton Wood, just outside of Liverpool. And it literally looked like everybody was drinking Guinness. You know, the table was just filled with glass with dark beer. So they could be very dark. They were often, you know, really just very dark brown, but they could tip over into being positively black.
So it's kind of funny. They start out pale and they become almost like a porter.
Yeah.
But that they ultimately replaced.
Yeah, not so roasty. There was a thing called mild malt, which was an amber malt.
Mm-hmm.
And they were using, to darken it, they were using caramel sugars. Mostly it was dark sugars. So not the the roast malts that were going into porters or the right. roast barley. It was a darkish malt, but the color was mostly coming from sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Invert sugars, caramelized sugars. So very dark sugars were going into this beer. So it didn't have those roasty flavors. Or, you know, there were maybe hints of a little bit of chocolate in there, but mostly by and large, a dark mild was not a roasty flavored beer.
Mm-hmm.
It was a dark, still quite sweet beer. Fair amount of hop in there, but not too much. So milds became more or less defined as low gravity, lightly hopped, a little bit sweet, and as I say, generally dark. And they were the mainstay of the British pub, really up until, as we just said, really up until the end of the 1950s. This mm-hmm. was the big beer.
What happened there?
Well, there's a great quote in the Times newspaper in London, which did a special report on beer. And it said, the working man today, this is 1960. Mm-hmm. The working man today thinks he's as good as his boss, and his boss drinks bitter. So the working man wants to drink bitter. And this is it. Suddenly, you know, drinking mild, it was a working class drink, and people started thinking, well, I'm as good as my boss, and he's drinking this bitter, so I'm going to drink that as well. I'm going to stop being working class mild drinker. I'm going to be an aspirational bitter drinker. So you literally, if you look at the sales of mild, it literally falls off a cliff from about 1960 as people turn very dramatically to drinking bitter. People have always, in the past 40 years probably, people have thought of bitter as being the traditional beer of Britain. It was only really the most popular beer from about 1963 through to about 1985.
Interesting.
So it's a fairly, you know, short window when mm-hmm. bitter was the drink of Britain.
Yeah, compared to mild, which was over 100 years probably, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And porter before that was about 150 years.
Mm-hmm.
So bitter then was replaced fairly rapidly by lager. Lager had been only 2% of British beer sales in 1960. It was up to about 20% by the mid-80s and swiftly zoomed up to become the most popular beer in the 1990s and is now around about 70%, 75% of British beer sales are now lager. And bitter is very much a minority. And mild has almost disappeared. There's hardly. There's about 3% mild sales in the 1990s, and I doubt that you'll find more than a dozen or so beers being brewed as mild. And certainly, I don't think there's very many regular. There's one or two. There's a couple of homebrew pubs in the Midlands that still brew mild beers. It's still quite a popular beer in the Midlands generally. Although that's actually a pale mild. There were areas who tended to be quite regional, and in London, in East Anglia, and in the northwest of England, and in Wales, very much dark mild. In the Midlands and in parts of the northeast of England, still pale milds.
So if I wanted to brew some of these variations, because it obviously evolved quite a bit over that 100+ years. How would I, let's say I wanted to start with a traditional, original mild, the one that actually replaced porter back in the 1850s. What might that look like in terms of, a malt bill and hops and so on?
Yeah. Well, it would be 100% pale malt. Not completely pale, I suspect. There'd be a bit of color in there. You would be using whatever your favorite local hop was. So I had a discussion a couple of months ago about hops. Hop varieties were not really a thing as far as brewers were concerned until really the beginning of the 20th century. They just tended to buy whatever was cheapest and most easily available,
mm-hmm.
except for the India Pale Ale brewers who really did go for, because they were producing a premium, expensive product, they went for the premium hops, which in those days would be the East Kent Goldings.
Mm-hmm.
Mild brewers would just be using whatever was around, you know, as long as it was fresh and cheap, that's what they would use. So you wouldn't have to worry too much about what hops you were using, as long as you were using English hops. The English brewers at that time didn't like American hops.
Which is interesting. I've had Ron Pattinson on, and he talks about how a large portion of the hops was actually imported going into the war years and throughout the interwar years and so on. And imported from America, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was the first big time that this happened was in 1817, which was famously the year without a summer, because there had been a big volcanic explosion in Indonesia, which had shot masses of
ash,
sulfur, and everything else into the atmosphere, and wiped out the summer in the northern hemisphere for the coming year. The hop harvest crashed, and so large amounts of hops were imported from the United States to try to make up for this. But the British brewers did not like this stuff. They said it tastes funny, it tastes piney. You know, ironically, all the words that people now use about American hops and love them, you know, all pine and catty and blackcurranty, exactly the same expressions that British brewers were using then about these American hops. So they didn't like it. They didn't like the flavors at all. So if you were producing a 19th century mild, you'd be brewing it to around about 7% alcohol. You'd be using pale malt. You'd be using English hops. Not Fuggles, because Fuggles hadn't been invented at that time, but you probably could use Fuggles, actually. But Fuggles is 150 years old this year, but didn't actually start coming onto the popular until the middle of the 1870s. So you're producing an 1830s, 1840s mild. You couldn't use Fuggles, it wasn't around. And served pretty quickly. You would want to be serving this, not keeping this beer for longer than probably about 2 or 3 weeks before you finished it off.
And as you mentioned, high alcohol too, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yes. There's a beer called Half and Half, or rather a mixture called Half and Half, which was half porter and half ale. Excuse me, my ear is itching.
That's okay.
Sorry about that. It's wearing the headphones. Beer called Half and Half, which was half porter, and the porter at that time was probably only about 6 or 6.5%, and half mild. And so this actually made a stronger drink than porter. If you wanted something that was, you know, a bit stronger than porter, but not necessarily as strong as mild, you'd drink half and half, mixture of the two.
And then can you contrast that now with what a mild might have looked like in the early 1960s?
Well, by the early 1960s, again, you get a very comparatively much weaker beer. You're talking about 3.2%, you know, original gravity around 1030, 1034 at the most. Could be a light beer. There were light milds around, but it would be not very heavily hopped. Again, by now you were probably using the classic English Fuggles and Goldings mixture, but you could be using other things, you know, Northern Brewer or whatever. If you were producing a dark mild, you were putting quite a lot of brewing sugars, invert dark sugars into it. But if you were producing something, this is the thing about British beer at that time. You were producing session beers, and you were producing beers that were meant to be to not get in the way of the conversation, basically, but still to be tasty and attractive enough that you would be talking away in the pub. You would be downing your pints of mild, and periodically you think, that was lovely, I'll have another one of those. And so you might drink 4, 5, 6 of these in an evening. And because it wasn't very strong and you were drinking it over a whole evening, and, you know, you were chatting, you were playing darts and, you know, eating pickled onions or whatever you might be wishing to have as a snack, you weren't getting drunk particularly.
Hmm. And why did they use sugars at this point? You mentioned originally it was 100% pale ale. What did the sugars really contribute?
I think, well, they contributed to color. They contributed to the sought after sweetness of the beer. And they generally, you know, lowered or altered the mouthfeel so that it was the kind of mouthfeel that people were after. You know, I think I may be completely wrong here, but the impression I've got is that the more malty a beer is, the more it tends to be maybe a bit cloying if you're having large amounts of it, if you're drinking quite a few pints. Mm-hmm. If you're putting sugar in there, then the mouthfeel is going to be less oppressive and you're able to drink quantities, considerably more in quantity.
So lighter beer, probably yeah, a little bit cheaper too. I know they use sugars and rice and all kinds of stuff here to make cheaper
and
beer.
I'm sure that, sure that had an effect in keeping the price down and keeping it affordable.
Were there any uniquely British brewing techniques used throughout this period, either from the beginning all the way through to the 1960s?
No, again, you get very much the regional variations in brewing techniques, so that the famous Yorkshire Square system, for example, mm-hmm. You would get the Burton Union system. You would get, and across large parts of the world, a now almost entirely vanished system, which was called the double drop system. Which was where you started off with a primary fermentation, and then after about 2 or 3 days, you literally dropped the still fermenting beer down into another fermentation vessel, shallow fermentation vessel on a different floor, leaving behind all the trub and the yeast, mm-hmm. dead yeast and so on. And this was called double drop. And this is a very popular style. And you can find, in fact, Derek Prentice, the great London brewer, was telling me that you could still see at Fuller's Brewery, if you go around Fuller's Brewery, where the double drop system was in use and where the brackets were for the different vessels, which have now been completely taken out because this is regarded as a terribly old-fashioned system. I think it's still in use by Breakspear. To brew Breakspear beers, but apart from that, that's a style that has vanished. So these were very much regional ways of doing it. There wasn't really a kind of an overall separate British thing. It depended. You would be brewing the way that had developed traditionally in your region, be it Yorkshire and Yorkshire Square, London and the South generally, the dropping system and so on.
You mentioned that they were, particularly the original one, used very low hop rates and probably had some sour components to it. I mean, the beer was made to be drunk very quickly, very fresh, but how big was the sour potential here as a flavor factor?
It took me a long time to realize. When I started out doing beer style history, it was for a long time I thought, because in the 20th century, there were these two different types of beer called mild and old. And I thought they were two different types of beer. And it took a long time before I realized that, in fact, the old was just the mild aged. And if you look at adverts, you can actually, 19th century adverts, you can actually see this. So they would describe these beers and they gave them X's. For their increasing strength, so single X was quite a weak beer, probably 1045, all the way up to 4X, which would be 1080s or something. And these higher beers, they were sold mild or old, which is to say you could buy it fresh or you could buy it with a bit of age on. And of course, once it had aged, then it did start getting those sour components, tart components. And again, this is a style that is banished, unfortunately. It's very sad. There used to be Gale's Prize Old Ale, produced by Gales Brewery down in Hampshire. And that was about the last of these aged sour ales. And it was just a beautiful beer. And it's now no longer being made. Fuller's Brewery took it over and produced one. Wasn't selling. I think they stopped too early. I think that if somebody went back to making these sour, very dark, sour olds, then today, when people have now got a renewed appreciation of sour beers, then it would be very successful. But unfortunately, Prize Old Ale died out just before people started getting into sour beers, which is a great pity.
And I assume the more modern mild ale was probably less sour, right? Because it had a little more hops modern techniques. And
It was entirely a question of time. If it was called a mild, then it hadn't had any age on it, and it was going to be sweet. And they were mostly lightly hot because it didn't need to be hot because they weren't going to be keeping. I mean, literally, you would send a cask of mild ale out. It would be in the pub cellar. And it would be got rid of within a fortnight. So there was no time for any kind of aged characteristic to go on it. So you didn't need to make it strong. You didn't need to make it hoppy because those are the two things that help keep sourness at bay. Only if you're making it an old ale, you might make it a bit more hoppy maybe. You might make it a bit stronger, or you would have it a bit stronger to fight off some of the souring characteristics because you didn't want it getting too sour. Too sour too quickly.
And of course, I'm assuming the beer was served probably at low carbonation rate, right?
Yeah, I don't think it had too much time to develop a great deal of carbonation. And they didn't do things like, I mean, the porter brewers would do things like what they call guiling, which was the same as krausening. Porter brewers would send out the beer with a shot of unfermented wort added to it so that it would kick off a secondary fermentation in the cask.
Yeah.
And that way you would get very high conditioned porters. Mild ale brewers didn't bother with that. They just sent the beer out as it was. They probably really wouldn't. Unlike with bitter, where you get a certain amount of continuing fermentation going on in the cellar. So a bitter, you would ideally cask conditioned bitter, put it in the cellar and leave it there for a couple of weeks, maybe even 3 or 4 weeks to get the condition going and coming back in. Mild ale, you didn't want any of that. You just wanted it out the door and into the pint pot as quickly as possible.
Interesting. Well, do you have any tips for somebody looking to brew a authentic mild ale today? Historical ale.
Yeah, well, again, as I say, it depends on, as with all these things, it's like when people talk about, I want to brew an authentic porter. Yeah, which period do you want to be authentic to?
Yeah,
again, with mild, you know, when do you want to be authentic to? If you want to produce an early 19th century mild, then try to find hops that are not going to give you too much hop character. You do not want a lot of hop character in this beer. You're looking at a beer with very little aged character on it, so it's going to be all about the malt, and you're wanting a good pale malt. If you're looking for something from the early to mid 20th century, then you're going to want if you can get hold of some nice amber malts, that'll be good. You're going to be looking much more at the sugars to give you the color and the flavor and the mouthfeel. And again, you're not going to want too much hop character in there. You're going to want a nice, subtle bitterness because you want that balance of bitterness and sweetness that makes a great drink. You know, that if you look at all the successful drinks, that people enjoy consuming in vast quantities, there's always a balance between bitterness and sweetness going on in there. So you want, if you're going to produce a good mild, it needs to be pretty low gravity, and that's a challenge in itself, to produce a tasty beer that's going to only have an original gravity of, you know, 1030, 1034 at the most, round about 2.5-3% alcohol. So it's a challenging beer to get right, and you're going to want something that is basically something that you want to drink several pints of. Something that will keep you going.
So kind of like a session beer, right?
It is very much a session beer. Yeah. You know, the British session was based on low gravity mild beers.
Well, where can folks learn more about mild ale and other historical British beer styles?
Well, they can get the, as I say, unfortunately,
the book.
Unfortunately, the hardback version is sold out, but the Kindle version is still available.
And the title and so on. The people for folks are listening. Most people are on audio.
Black, oh, Amber Golden Black by Amber me, Golden Martin Black. Cornell.
There you go.
Available and for only about £9, I think, through your, or whatever that is, dollars, sorry, through your local electronic bookseller. Or you can follow my good mate Ron Pattinson's blog. He talks a lot about brewing milds, and he has a number of recipes for brewing milds in his books as well.
Yeah, I've had Ron on probably 4 or 5 times now, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Great man. Brian just talks about the history. Ron goes into the actual details of what recipes are like and what you need to be doing. And he's actually several of his books have proper, very good recipes for different types of mild from different brewers.
Well, Martin, I'd like to get your closing thoughts on mild ale and its 100-plus year history in Britain.
Yeah, it's a great pity, I think, that mild dropped out of favour because it really was a great beer to spend an entire evening on. They were delicious. They were, because they had a fast turnover, they didn't hang around. They kept the session going. And it's they were a triumph for the British brewers art and being able to produce these great low-gravity, tasty beers. And if only I thought I could think that we would ever see them revived again, I'd be delighted. I don't think we will, sadly.
Well, Martin, really appreciate you having you on the show today. It's been great having you as a guest.
Well, thank you for having me. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I talk about beer for forever, as you possibly noticed.
My guest today was Martin Cornell, historical beer author and winner of both North American and British Guild Beer Writers Awards. Thank you again, Martin. Great having you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
A big thank you to Martin Cornell for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. To order yours today, visit blickmanengineering.com. And finally, I urge you to give Beersmith 3 Brewing Software a try. If you've not downloaded the new 3-point update, grab it now as it includes improved data storage, additional dry hop options, new mash pH models, new add-ons, and much more. To download your free 21-day trial, go to beersmith.com today. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.